You're listening to The Comedy Cellar, live from the table on the Riotcast Network, riotcast.com.
Okay, now watch this. Ready? Ready, Dan? Sometimes. Go ahead.
I don't want to do it.
One, two. Come on. One, two, three. Some. Come on, Dan.
Sometimes
I feel like I got to get away from the...
I don't know the words.
Get away, I got to... And I run to you.
Start over.
No, we're not going to cut this out.
Sometimes I feel I've got to get away. I've got to run away from this.
All right, let's get the show on.
All right, I thought that could be good, Dan, if only you didn't pussy out.
Well, that's what I do oftentimes.
Dan sings great, and then...
He does.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to the Comedy Cellar Show here on Sirius XM, Channel 99, Raw Dog, the comedy channel. We're here with Dan Natterman, filling in for Krista Montella, is my beautiful... Will you stop watching TV? My beautiful wife, Juanita Bihari Dwarman.
I don't go by that name anymore.
And Liz Foriati, we got Krista Stefano's gonna join us in a minute. But Dan, of course, wants to bring us up to date. Go ahead, Dan. What's going on in this week, the year of our Lord, whatever it is? Go ahead.
Well, I did want to ask Liz, since we have her here, a Pacific question.
I don't want to answer.
Did you say Pacific?
Pacific question.
He did. Go ahead, well, Russell.
Well, and Noam, obviously.
Liz is our general manager here at the Comedy Cellar.
With regard to...
And the co-host of the Misery Loves Company podcast with Kevin Brennan. If anybody could be considered a co-host, go ahead.
Well, actually, I was talking to this about this with somebody else. Around the corner, just to bring our listeners up to date, we have a show every Friday and Saturday called Inside Joke.
Yes.
Which upstairs at the bar, Noam made that into performance space, and we have a show called Inside Joke, and basically it's the same show as all the other shows, except we don't announce who's on.
Correct.
And the question comes up, where does that, the idea of not announcing who's on, how does that benefit, how is that of benefit, and how does that, why do we do that, in other words?
It was Liz's idea.
I like it.
No, because, you know, I was talking with, I think
it came in a dream, Natterman.
I think it was Ryan Hamlin. Somebody brought up the point that, and I don't know if this is true or false, that the audience thinks they're getting a lesser show, and that if you put up who is on the show, they'll know that it's the same show as all the other
shows. I think the audience generally always wants to be here first, to be on McDougal Street downstairs, and then after that, they'll take the Village Underground and then the Pussycat. And yeah, we're not releasing the lineups.
I like the idea of not knowing who's going to be on. It could be somebody famous or somebody
well,
not
it
famous.
Could always be somebody famous because they're not on the lineup anyway.
And what is it, 10 bucks? And for 10 bucks,
15.
You never know. 15. You never know who you're going to see.
But 15 is lower than the show cost downstairs.
Correct, right.
So in other words, the audience might perceive this for that reason as a lesser show. And if you put up who's on the show, they'll know that it's pretty much the same show. And that might have some value.
You might be right. You know, my idea was that to create a show there which was more spontaneous, where anything could happen, where anybody could get up, anybody who happened to show up, or to kind of keep it loose in order to have flexibility. But, you know, maybe that's just not panning out.
On the weekends, it's hard right now to have flexibility because there are so many shows and everything is timed so perfectly that 5 minutes here or there throws three shows for a loop.
Maybe we should try announcing the lineup, because maybe people who like particular comics will want to go to that show, and then maybe they'll be more enthusiastic about the...
Let's do it.
All right. Yeah, anything else you want to talk
about?
Well,
I also would mention that I'm hot off my first Conan TBS appearance that...
Yay!
You might have seen.
Applause.
It.
Congratulations.
Applause. Congratulations.
I saw it.
Yeah.
Hold on.
What?
Liz.
What are you doing, Liz?
Mike Yard is calling me. I think he's hosting.
This is what it's like. This is the glamorous life. Go ahead, Liz. Mike Yard, MC tonight, is calling Liz with some bullshit excuse.
What are you doing? You're hosting?
Is he late?
At 7:30. And where are you now? No, I'm working. Where are you right now? Oh, my God.
Tell him this isn't the Wilmore show.
Noam wants you to understand that this is not the Larry Wilmore show. This is the Comedy Cellar.
All right, so go ahead, Dan.
No, I was just saying I'm certainly open to any praise that anybody wishes to give me. If not, we can move on.
The Conan thing. Well, first of all, this is the thing about Dan. Dan gets these late night talk shows, and then he badmouths them, and he thinks it means nothing. And then all of a sudden, so I've learned to not mention them to him because usually he gets negative.
No, but then, from an artistic
but then
point of
if you
view,
don't mention it to him, he gets like, well, nobody's mentioning my Conan show.
Well, that's you bring up a good point. So then how do we close that paradox?
It's very feminine. That's a very feminine quality of yours, Dan. It's very wife-like.
Well, I am not. I never deny that I have a feminine character to me.
You're
very,
very effete.
Well, that's a word that nobody uses.
He is kind of wifey on this show.
No, you know, what these shows do for me is they provide me with about 2 or 3 days. Because now with the social media, what I didn't get my first, 10-plus years ago when I did these shows, is a lot of compliments on Facebook that I do enjoy reading. And that comes usually for the next 2 days or so, and then it kind of drops off, and now it's kind of gone now and leaving me face-to-face with a cold and different universe. But for a couple of days, it is sort of a Band-Aid over my existential crisis that I'm in, reading those comments about how great it was. And most of them were very positive.
I think Conan is no longer part of the popular zeitgeist, and I think it just doesn't get... Is that the right word? I don't think it gets that much attention.
But it gets as much attention as any other show.
No, I think that...
I've done them, and I'm telling you that it gets as much attention as any other
show. I would imagine Conan's ratings are significantly less than... And his viral... It's not Fallon. I'll tell you that. It's not Fallon.
But Fallon really doesn't have stand-up.
Well, Fallon doesn't have a lot of stand-ups on.
I mean, Jeff Dye and someone else.
He has some stand-ups on now and again. Among the shows that have stand-ups, Conan is as relevant as anybody. And I'd done Letterman several times when he was on the air. And, you know, in terms of the number of Twitter followers I get and the number of Facebook likes and the number of... The YouTube video that they put up from the show has already surpassed anything I ever got on Letterman. So,
oh really?
That's what everyone says. Everyone says
they have a better presence. Yeah. And then,
how many hits?
Well, right now we're about 50,000. I'm not sure.
Oh, wow.
I don't think it'll go too much more because we're several days out. And of course, I'm comparing and despairing because Marina Franklin, for example, had 150, and I don't know necessarily what accounts for that. But in any case...
Can you introduce your friend, Chris?
Chris DiStefano, is it? Well, he's all of our friends.
Oh, go ahead.
Isn't he not?
I think I'm friendly.
Chris DiStefano, he's a friend of mine, but not that we call each other on the phone.
I'm a friend of the table. I'm a friend of the room.
You're a friend of ours.
Yeah.
But we invited you here for a specific reason. Well, Chris has an interesting backstory. If you're a fan of the show, you know that Chris has a pretty interesting story. He met a woman... And proceeded to impregnate her within the week.
That's how I roll.
Yeah. and so now they have a baby. He barely knows this woman.
Right. We've known each other for 2 years, and we have a almost 16-month-old baby.
My God.
So you didn't impregnate her right away. I thought you impregnated her like that week.
Yeah, well, it was. I met her in...
Oh, right, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about the 9 months that it takes.
Yeah.
That's right. So you impregnate her immediately, and then you've decided to not only you decide to keep the child, but you decided to go one step further and keep the mother.
Yes.
You know, you're keeping her around.
I have a whole, little Puerto Rican family now. That's great.
I do too, by the way.
Yeah, I know. That's why we have the connection.
But Noam
there.
Did the exact opposite of you did. Noam knew Juanita for 20 years before he got the idea that maybe we can have a family together.
No, I think I did impregnate her right away, though.
Oh my God.
So let's take a moment of silence for the 20-year-old that is not here. That would have probably been a great kid.
I mean, she is Puerto Rican.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah, so anyway, Chris is an interesting guy. He looks like a jockey meathead, right?
Right.
Is that fair to say?
Sure. Yeah, I think it's
fair. And yet he is tender as a lamb.
Very tender. I grew up around all women. So.
But that's not enough to account for.
Was your dad around?
He was there. No, my dad was a great dad. But like it was my mom, her three sisters, and their daughters, and me in the house.
Oh.
So how manly can you really get?
Well, I think you can get quite manly.
Yeah, but it's hard to like be like a man, you know, when you're using Herbal Essence shampoo.
Well, but I think I hear you, but I think there's more to this.
Dan
story.
Was raised by all men.
I was raised by
wolves.
I had women in the house too, but yeah. No, I think there's more to it than that. I think you have a genuine feminine side.
Maybe he's a little.
You're saying
no.
he's
a fig.
You
have you been
know.
Accused of that?
Huh?
Have you been accused of being gay? Have people made that?
I think not never to my face because I'm, you know, I'm too big for someone to say that to my face.
Well, I'm going
to
say it right here and now.
On Twitter, though, like social media, you know. Yeah, but I mean, that's what every, I mean, first of all, I feel like I went to a Catholic high school, right? So in my group of friends, it was like if I called you a homo, that meant like we were cool, you know? So everyone had like an effeminate... Nobody was like sucking. I'm not saying we were sucking each other's dicks, but people were like, let me see your dick, bro. And then you just pull out like, ah, and then move on, you know?
What? Did that happen in everybody's locker room? That's so weird.
My gig last Tuesday night, Nick, Colin and Nick were drunk. And Nick's like, come on, let me see that cock. Let me see that cock to Colin.
Yeah.
And Colin was about to pull out his dick. And I'm like, oh, I got to get out of here.
Yeah. Growing up, same, pretty much similar upbringing. If you didn't, like, then it was probably because you were gay. And then we would know to back off.
Well, if you didn't,
like there was this one kid.
Oh, that's interesting.
There was this one kid in my high school who never partook in that stuff, and he's openly gay now.
Probably because he worried that he might pull it out, and it might be harder than
times in 29.
Yeah, you know, some of the
other. Oh yeah, it's gotta be.
This
it's gotta
is just
be limp.
All too strange.
You can't.
Some of the other.
You don't pull your dick out. I know you're gay.
Yeah,
that's weird.
It's weird shit, but that's what happens growing up here.
You can't have a sty in her eye in front of my Italian father. It's always fucking gay jokes with him. Like, oh, yeah, sty. Come on, Chris. What, cum shot? You mean, where'd you get that from? You know, this is what he does. My dad takes situations that aren't gay, makes them gay, then involves some Latino guy I've never heard of. That's this guy's move. That's his move. Since I'm 3 years old, that's the guy's move. Every Thanksgiving, I got to hear about this shit. Yo, is a stiff neck, is that a gay thing? That's a head and neck muscle spasm. You get a stiff neck, it's not gay, okay? It happens. I was sleeping wrong on the pillow, okay? It was drafty. My daddy always, I was like, oh, came down and got a stiff neck, Dad. Guess it was sleeping wrong on the pillow. He's like, Chris, come on, sleeping wrong on the pillow. You out blowing Roberto last night. Who's Roberto? Come on, Chris, your Latin boyfriend Roberto. They go, no, you like Latin guys with those lips. Come on, I know that shit. What the fuck are you talking about? This kid sucks Goya dick. That's what he said to me once. I was like, what the hell does that mean, Goya dick? Did you just say that at Thanksgiving? Goya dick. He does it to me all the time. Remember last month, the Oscars and the Knick game were on the same exact time. He wants to test me. He's like, what do you want to do tonight? You want to watch the Oscars or you want to watch your Knick game? You want to watch the Oscars? You could go do that shit with Julio. I was like, who the hell is Julio? Your Latin boyfriend, Julio. They go, oh, no? I know Julio. Come on, you fucking. It's what you like, Sassone dick. That's what you like all day. Fucking Julio. I was like, I thought it was Roberto. He's like, oh, so it is Roberto. That's who it was. This fucking guy, salsa dancing dick.
Can I cut to the chase? So Chris,
cut to the chase.
Chris bragged that his girlfriend who is both his muse. Is that what they call it? His muse.
Yeah.
And because she's inspired a whole motherload of humor for him, but also makes his life difficult at times.
Yes.
She was going to come on the show here to discuss it, and I brought. Not to be one-upped, I brought my own Puerto Rican difficult wife.
It would have been great.
And then she backed out. Something about a Zumba
we'd
class.
We'd be high-fiving. She had
the most Puerto Rican excuse ever, Zumba. So she's teaching Zumba all night. But she wants to come on. And I'm happy that I wish that she would have been here because maybe we could have clarified. Because I told you that once, like a couple of months ago when I met Juanita, I was talking about how my night was to Jasmine, and I was like, oh, I met Noam's wife, the owner of the club. She's Spanish, too. And she was like, really? And then, like, asking all these questions, like, is she pretty? How old is she? And I was like, no, I'm just saying, like, they would be good, like, I said, you know, he's got a Spanish wife.
Good bridge partner.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I would just thought, and he was like, she was like, so go be with her then. I was like, no, it's not, she's not available. I'm not talking, you know what I mean? Like, I was just trying to be nice, but it's, you know, with
he's
her,
a jealous woman.
With her, you know,
well, this is the kind of stuff that inspired his show.
Yeah.
Well, we'll get to the show in a second.
You always, I'm always like, with her, it's like, I never know, like, the next word I say or move I make, if that's going to, if now I'm going to, blow, you know, get
that's
step on a landmine.
Yeah.
I don't know.
You don't know. That's
you
right. I was hanging with her.
Oh,
and
really?
And then just the very act of avoiding the landmines becomes,
yes.
Right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
What landmines are you avoiding exactly?
We're interviewing Chris, not me now, honey.
You're the one that brought it up.
I love this.
No, I was bringing it up in terms of him.
Yeah. So now, like, even today, actually, I've just been being quiet. I've been being more quiet.
Oh, don't do
yeah.
that.
Because I just felt like, you know what? I don't want to say anything. We just got over a big fight. Like, it's fine. And then she comes into the room today, and she was like, why are you being so quiet? And I was like, I don't know. I just figured, like, you know, you're cooking. You want your space. She goes, why are you being so quiet? What are you hiding from me? I'm like, I'm not hiding anything from you. I'm just fucking scared of you. So I'd rather just sit in my room and not talk. And, you know, so it's like one of the – it's like I can't
– Chris, I'm going to do you a favor.
Figure it out.
I don't offer this to everybody, by the way.
Oh, yes. Going back to Catholic high school?
I'm going to seduce your wife. And you will then, that will then get, then she won't be able to say shit.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you'll be able to, well, you fucked Dan Natterman. Now I can do what I want.
Exactly.
So you think about that.
That's brilliant, actually.
That's
like
a
Hitchcock
idea.
Movie.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
That would be beautiful.
Well, you know, it's something, I don't offer lightly, but you're a friend.
Right.
So, but the thing is, so now you have a, can you talk about it? You have a show that's...
Yeah. I have a pilot with CBS about my life.
So just before you go into the pilot, just my question is, because it pertains to everything, is that she's so irritable. I don't know what the word is. Like, she's so volatile.
Right.
Yet she knows that you've made her the centerpiece of your act now, right? And she's okay with that?
She's okay with it because... You know, like any other comedian, like nothing is, like she'll do something and I don't tell the crowd or write the joke verbatim. Then I'm just like, that's reality stuff. I write jokes about her. So she'll do something and I'll try to create a whole thing. So when she listens to me, she's like, I never did any of that. But, you know, she did it in my mind. Like she'll do something. I'm like, wait, this is going to, I'll twist it this way in my head to make it funny. So in a way, it's like it's her. It's a hyper exaggerated version of her. So she's very much like that's not me.
All right, but you've done a lot of work. You've done a lot of work convincing her that this is like that she shouldn't take this personally.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I mean,
well, no. The bottom line is like I'm like, look, I talk when we first met. I was like, I talk about my life. You know, if you become a part of it, you'll be spoken about. But it's how we make money. Like we're surviving off this. You don't have to worry about anything. We're doing all right. So she's a part of it. So she's, you know, she's cool with it, I think. I think she thinks it's, like, cool.
Well, I met her.
Juanita wouldn't.
Yeah.
I met her for the first...
It depends, I mean.
No. Go ahead, Dan.
I met her for the first time. I guess I've seen her before, but I actually spoke with her for the first time, and I find her to be a lovely, young lady.
I'm passing Dan a $100 bill underneath the table as we speak.
Oh, is she going to listen to this show?
She might. Yeah, she might. Yeah.
Does she have SiriusXM?
Yeah, she has it on our, you know, she gets it off the TV on her phone.
Oh, nice.
The house.
Well, anyway, I thought she's a very attractive, nice lady, and I frankly can't believe
she... I Twitter-stalked her today.
Yep.
You Twitter-stalked her?
Yeah, I got
and
to see
Instagram
what she looked like.
Her.
I don't know that she does.
She's very pretty.
Now you want to tell us about the show.
Well, so I just want to know also with regard to the show, so also a little background, you know... what they used to do is in this business is they would give people deals for sitcoms based kind of on what they talk about in their act.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they've been doing it less and less over the years, but maybe they're bringing it back. Or how did they get... What was it, CBS?
It was. So what happened was is these guys, Craig Thomas and Carter Bays, they created How I Met Your Mother. They saw me here at the Cellar one night, and then they came up to me after and were like, you know, we think that there could be a whole show about you, so let's start a process. So our agents, you know, got together. We have the same agency and we would, you know, go in their office. We sat here in the booth a couple of times and just started kind of honing what about my life they think they could make a pilot story. So we came up with that, and then we set up meetings in LA.
Well, what did they say? What part of your life? They were like, oh, yeah, we want that Puerto Rican side of the story.
Well, yeah, that, like, the really, like, the blending of, like, an Italian, you know, family with a Spanish family, you know, with just having a baby, with getting to know a new culture, a new woman, how to be a dad, all that stuff. Like, all that stuff is, like, what sitcoms.
And also the idea that you don't really know her for that. I mean, you impregnated her fairly quickly. That would play into it.
Right. It's like getting to know your child and getting to know the mother at the same time, or in your wife.
Does she have any, like, bad influence uncles and stuff that you have to worry about?
You mean, like, in real life? No. No, because my dad takes care
of... Trump's.
Yeah,
my dad's
side takes care of any of her problems. You know?
Not about you, Noam, okay?
I'm just asking.
Oh, is that a personal thing?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, yeah, a little bit. I'm with one of you had the same experience. So.
No. Her family is great. Her family is, like, very supportive, and they're very good people. And she's a great person, too. She really is. It's just, you know, we just met and we had a baby, so there's no way to not go through that without problems.
What about relationship counseling? That didn't work out?
No, it's just, you know, it's like too, it doesn't work.
Now, I think you had told me, just to review, when you, the night of conception,
mm-hmm.
You were kind of, in your mind, it wasn't an accident, or at least it wasn't entirely an accident.
Yeah, I knew what I was doing, right. There was something deeper, I think, inside me. Maybe I just wanted to have a kid. And I was like, you know what? Everything's going great. Everything's going great. Let's throw a monkey wrench in there.
You're like, it's been a week, so let me just make a baby?
Yeah.
For real?
Yeah, I just got past the comedy show. It's been my dream. Let's have a fucking kid.
Well, you know, I mean.
Oh, my God. Let's do it.
Look, the thing is, if you don't want a kid bad enough, you probably wouldn't have the kid.
Oh, yeah.
So it's like, it's how much of a risk you're willing to take. I'm not saying you impregnated her on purpose, but you didn't do what I usually do, which was pull out, you know, quite a bit beforehand.
Right. Well, that's very true, because
how far beforehand?
Far enough.
Minutes? Because
I'm very, very, very cautious.
Right.
Because I really don't want a kid.
How about you just wear a condom
and I really don't.
Crazy.
Well, if I wear a condom, I'll pull it out and check the condom midway through to make sure it's make sure that it is still intact.
Yeah.
Because I, A, don't want a baby. B, don't want to have an abortion. That, to me, I just don't want to do that. So
it's hard, yeah.
So I take extra. But you played it right to the edge of the cliff, it seems to me. Like, you were not wearing a condom? Is that?
I was, but then I took it off.
Shut up. Are you serious?
Yeah, she was too hot. I was like, I'm going to take it off. I was just so attracted to her.
And then you blasted.
Yeah,
entire
fucking Mountain Dew blast. Yeah.
So it sounds to me like you had not even the slightest...
There's a part of me
precaution that you were taking.
No. Yeah, like, and people, you know, when she was pregnant, my peers were like, oh, it's going to ruin your career, it's going to do this, it's going to do that, but...
What's done the opposite?
You know, Mountain Dew is like a bright green color. Yeah. That's all you're thinking about.
I was on steroids at the time.
Maybe don't eat Mountain Dew, but anyway.
But, you know, I feel like I have... I think because with me, like, you know, before I even started comedy, I was a physical therapist and, you know, went all the way through graduate school and have this, like, big safety net that it's very much like nothing scares me. Like, I want to do well in this career. I really do. I want to. But it's like if you took it away from me tomorrow, I'd definitely be upset about it. But I'd be like, I can still survive off. I'm a physical therapist. I have a doctorate degree. Like, so my friends, my peers who were like, it's going to ruin your life. I was like, maybe it'll ruin your life, but I fucking set shit up before, you know, I set up a safety net for myself before.
I'm not buying it.
Yeah.
If this goes south and you have to go back to physical therapy, we're going to find you hanging from a tree somewhere.
I'm definitely in too deep now in this career. Yeah. But what I'm saying is if it happened, it's more of a mental thing. Mentally, I'm like, look, what I'm going to do. So I think that played into...
Well, who's telling you that your career... These are people that are not comics that told you your career is over, I assume.
No, you know, in the beginning, your friends are like, that's going to be bad for your career. And...
You know, I mean, we've known people that have had kids. We know several, in fact, that are comics, and not one of them has broken their stride in the comedy business.
No, it motivates you.
It motivates you, and it gives you that extra material.
Yes,
I didn't realize that enough.
I got to talk about my nieces and nephews. There's nothing there. I got one joke about, you know, about... not molesting them, and that's why I'm a good uncle.
Well, there's a chicken and egg thing. You take on some people are reluctant to take on responsibilities because they feel they're not ready for them.
Right.
But then the truth is, I think that when you take on the responsibilities, that's then you get ready for them. Then you rise to the occasion.
Right. Yeah, like that's what I realize now. Like, you know, I have a cousin who's 22 years old. He's not in a similar situation, but he's having a baby and he's upset. And he's like, I'm not going to be able to do it. And I'm like, look, when you get thrown into it, you're going to be able to do it. Like, there's never a right time. People are like, I want to wait to have a baby. It's like, you're going to wait until it's too late. Like, if the baby comes, you'll figure it out. You'll make it work. Somehow you'll make it work.
But also, you knew all this, which is why you didn't wear a condom.
Right.
And why?
Yeah.
Because in the back of
I don't buy any of that.
In the back of Chris's mind, he knew that he could handle this, and this was.
Let me.
What do you mean? No.
Okay.
No,
look.
What do you mean? No. He wanted that kid.
Listen, I think that he's a person. He's committed. Nut. He says, you know what? I made my bed. I'm going to sleep.
Yeah.
He's a committed
responsible
person.
He's committed.
Yeah,
not
but
all men
the
are that
reason
way.
He
so
took that.
That's a great
But
thing.
He wouldn't have taken that risk if he didn't have.
I don't think that's why he took the risk.
Yeah.
Dan, of course it is. If he knew that a baby would destroy him, he would have pulled out and blasted on her.
No one says, oh, this baby's going to destroy me in
drunk?
The middle of sex, okay?
You know, tipsy. But here's
I do.
One Tito's it
was
soda
drunk then.
We're not teenagers. We're grown men, and I think most grown men, when they're having sex, have that in mind.
This no, whole, you know what?
No, they don't.
Go ahead, Chris.
Maybe not in your culture.
Listen, you mean in your culture? Because that's what
listen,
I married.
I have the Note 7.
Yeah.
This is the one that blows up. Apparently, you know the one they recalled.
Yeah.
And Essie's like, you have to go take that note back. I'm like, Esty, it's a 24 out of a million. She goes, no, what's the matter with you? You can't. I'm like, Esty, when you've had as much unprotected sex as I have, you're sweating 24 out of a million. So what I'm saying is that there's all this talk out there about everybody being so careful with sex, but nobody is. Even the girls don't even expect you to wear a condom.
No. Yeah.
You've had some, you know, you've impregnated some women over the years.
What?
What?
Juanita has two children.
What are you talking
Dan,
about?
What the hell's the matter with you? What the fuck is the matter
Didn't
with you?
Didn't you just say at the beginning of the show that you impregnated Juanita 20 years ago? Did you not say it at the beginning of the
I
show?
I know. Did I say that, honey?
Yeah, but you didn't mean it that way.
I impregnated my first girlfriend in high school.
All right, this is way off topic. You guys are like retarded.
It's not exactly off topic. We're talking about getting women pregnant, but go ahead.
Yeah.
Chris has also admitted that he kind of wanted to impregnate.
Was she the first woman you got pregnant?
No, that's the thing. She wasn't. I had gotten a girlfriend before that pregnant, and then immediately once she told me, there was something inside me that was like, no, this is not right. So we made a decision to not keep it. And then with Jasmine, even though I knew her for fucking 5 minutes, when she was like, I'm pregnant, something inside me was like, you have to do this. Something inside me was like, if I get rid of this, I'll regret it for the rest of my life. And now that I have my daughter, if I would have gotten rid of her, I would have fucking killed myself. You know?
Well, no, because now you know her. Now to think backwards and say if you got rid of her, it would have been...
Listen,
but if you,
nobody's that deep in thought when they're like meeting up and hooking up and having sex.
Well,
was playing
maybe
the
I'm
odds.
The only
That's
one.
It.
Right.
But you told me you wanted to kind of in the back of your mind impregnate her.
Yeah, I think
that's kind of sick.
You know what? You know what's sick? You know what's the sickest thing? I really now that time has went by and I think it doesn't really matter what the reason is anymore because I have my daughter and like my whole life changed. But I think that one of the reasons why I think I may have been playing like this Russian roulette with her is because she had a child. I liked her so much. Like when I saw her, I was like, I'm like in love with this girl at first sight. And then when she was like, she had a child, it was like a sinking feeling where I was like, I'm only going to be able to like feel equal to her if we have a kid too. And it was like that weird psychosis in my head. So I wonder if she didn't have a child, I would have maybe not intentionally or like I would have been more careful. It's weird. I've only retrospectively started to realize that that's probably why I did that. Because it's very hard, even for my family. Like, look, we love the baby we love, but why would you do that on like the first date? Why would you do that and not be careful? And I was like, well, I think it's because of that. I think it's because I the only way I could feel emotionally equal to her was if we had a kid too. Because I felt like if I go out with her, she has the father of the first child is still in the picture. I'm going to feel like I'm meaningless. I'm going to feel like it's not going to work. Something inside me says you have to make it work with this girl. So stupid logic was like, maybe just have a baby. You know?
I'm so happy that you're telling this story. You know why?
Yeah.
Because before people just say, oh, you know, he's got a baby mama, she's Puerto Rican. Automatically they think,
oh, this girl got pregnant. Like, this girl tried, you know, like.
Yeah.
No, she came, she was like, she told me when she was
But in reality,
pregnant.
It was you.
Yeah, because she, yeah, she was like, I'm going to get rid of this. She was like, I don't know you that well. You don't know me. I already have a son. She was like, I'm not, I can't risk this. She's like, so I'm going to get rid of it. And then, you know, I was like, no. I was like, you can't. I was like, I'll take the baby. Like, I don't. You can't get rid of it.
And no part of your brain was thinking there's a sitcom in here somewhere.
Yeah, he's a mastermind.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, what's the story with her and her first kid?
He's, you know, he lives with me, too. My stepson, he's a good kid. He's six. So he's 6 years old. He doesn't know what the fuck is going on.
If I had that dad here on the show, would he be telling the same story as you? Like, I just knew
I
loved
now,
to have a baby
now
with
his
this
dad,
woman.
Now his dad does stand-up comedy, actually.
Oh, God.
Oh, wow. Really?
Oh,
are you serious?
Yeah.
When did that start?
I think a year or two ago.
Wow.
So.
See how it happens, honey?
That's weird. Bizarre. That doesn't bother you?
You know, well, no, I mean, he told me, he was like, look, I know coincidentally you come into, you know, my son's life and you're a stand-up comic. He's like, but I've always wanted to do it. He's like, and I was going to do it before I met, you know, before I even heard about you. He was already enrolled in a comedy class.
Were they ever together? Were they ever boyfriend and girlfriend?
Oh, yeah, they were together for about 4 or 5 years.
And did she know he wanted to be, is she like attracted to comedians? What is this?
No. He wasn't a comedian.
He wasn't a comedian.
He only became a comedian
The real issue here is that there's so many fucking comedians.
Yeah.
I mean, you know,
everybody's
20
a comedian.
Years ago, everybody's that would have never happened because comedians were so rich. Now, comedian is a legitimate career choice.
Yes.
There's so many outlets for
not
comedy.
Not in a Jewish home, it's not.
That, well, I don't know about that. But there's so many outlets for comedy now that, you know, a random group of 10 people, one of them just might well be at the UCB.
Well, now these comedy schools, I mean, you could be a teacher at one of these comedy schools and make 6 figures in a year just teaching comedy. How the fuck do you teach
six
comedy?
6 figures?
Wow.
Some of these people make a lot of money because they do private
they
courses and all
classes.
That.
Classes.
Oh, yeah.
They build on it. They build on it.
Rick Crumb has like 6 classes going at the same time.
Yeah.
Wow.
We need to get a piece of that. He uses the Comedy Cellar name, for Christ's sake. Yeah. He doesn't give me a dime.
He's outsourced to other teachers.
Wow.
Yeah, he has a faculty now.
So
Rick
it's Crumb. Almost
what?
Not...
You're not on the faculty?
I got to wet my beak a little bit on that. Just a little taste.
Oh, my Lord. What kind of businessman are you?
I thought you were. You're not getting anything from Rick Crumb's comedy school?
Zero. Zero.
Don't you know my husband? He just gives it
all
away.
All I get is the potential liability if he fucks somebody and they sue the Comedy Cellar.
That's right.
And I don't mean fuck like a little Asian boy. I mean like, I mean like you know, if somebody feels that I paid all this money and I'm still not funny, I want to sue you. That kind of thing.
That kind of thing.
Great.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, we have to. Rose, take a. I mean, Liz, let's take a memo.
Got it.
We need to take it. Oh, Paul McCurry's
call. So where's the show at? You're at the pilot stage. You're writing the script or you've finished the script?
We're writing the script.
For the pilot.
And
do you have a pilot deal? So the pilot's definitely going to get shot?
Yes, we have a pilot commitment because what happened was we sold the show. We got offers from CBS, NBC, and ABC. So we had leverage. So CBS gave us, you know, just the sweetest deal and, you know, and you know, the network that we wanted to work with. So they said, you know what, we'll give you an actual pilot commitment. Because if you don't get, so how it works is you know, if you sell a show, maybe a network will buy 40 scripts. And then out of the 40 scripts, they'll maybe choose 10 of them to make pilots. And then out of those 10 pilots, they'll make one or two that'll actually, you'll see the television show on the air. So they just skipped the stage. They were like, instead of 1 out of 40 chance, we'll give you like a 1 out of 10 chance. So it was a big deal for them to do that. It's a huge, you know, because a lot... More than, you know, 70% of these shows.
What is the tentative title for the show? Is it named after you like every other show on the air these days?
Yeah, we don't have a
name. The Stefano?
I love Chrissy.
I love
Chrissy,
yeah. Let me see your dick.
Are you going to be a stand-up comic in the show?
No. No, probably most likely be a physical therapist.
Okay. Oh.
Yeah.
I have a question for you. This is a serious question. If I were in your situation, I would be studying, because we all know, very, very, very talented comedians and very, very talented comedy writers who have just had the worst stink bombs of sitcoms.
Right.
You don't want to be that guy, right?
Right.
So if I were in your shoes, and I presume you're doing this, I'd be studying the most important sitcoms throughout history and trying to glean what things, if anything, that they all have in common that you wanted to make sure that you had in your show and what mistakes that bad ones have made that you don't want to do.
Right.
Have you had thoughts about those things?
I have. I got lucky because this, before I even sold the show, I had met and spoke with at length to Ray Romano. We were doing a show together in Boston, and his advice to me was, he was like, you know, because he watched my stand-up, and he was like, you know, when we started talking, he was like, you know, you could probably do a sitcom about your life because you got the Spanish girl and the mafia dad and all that. And that was, you know, months and months before this even happened. But when we were talking, he was like, if you get in the, if you get the sitcom, what you should do is watch your family, like really, really, really watch them. And he's like, don't try to make it funny. Like, you know, just watch them and write stuff down about what happened, like almost a journal. And then you go into the writer's room and you talk about what what's relatable to the other writers. So, you know, maybe everybody's grandma said this at Christmas, or maybe it's everybody's thing. And then, because he said, you guys are, you know, in the writer's room, you're funny. You're all comedians who are going to be writing. So the funny is going to come out. He was like, don't try to make a family situation that's so wacky. Because then it doesn't work. It's not believable. Make something like, you know, yeah, this.
But that's not what Noam is saying.
What Noam is saying
is study sitcoms and see what works and what doesn't work. Which, unfortunately,
if it were that easy,
every sitcom would be a success.
Well, the truth is that just like, you know, I mean, this is a dumb example, but you know how like there's like five pizzerias in Manhattan that have great pizza and all the rest are mediocre.
Right.
How fucking hard is it? Like, you would think that everybody who opened a pizzeria would study the best pizza and say, listen, I'm gonna make sure my pizza's as good as... They don't.
Right.
They don't. It seems so obvious, but for whatever reason, people, their ego doesn't allow them, or they're not able to take the criticism, but people don't actually do what it is we're speaking about.
Well, with me, like, I always make a choice on stage to talk about something that honestly happened to me. So this way, like, I don't just talk about in general what Puerto Ricans are like, or in general what Italians are like. I talk about my specific life, because then, you know, when I first started comedy, I was like, this way nobody can ever steal it from me. It's my stuff. Like, you know, not everybody's dad has a friend named Bobby Petz. That's a real person. You can't take that.
I don't know about the mafia. I'm not claiming. I mean, my dad's probably involved, most likely. Just... I've never asked him. I don't want to get whacked. But I just know, just by like his friends, they all have a first name and then a nickname. That's a very mafia thing right there. I don't know these guys' last names. It's just the first name and the nickname. And these are real people. Like my dad's best friend, Tommy Pinesalls. I was like, what? Why do you call him Tommy Pinesalls? He's like, he cleans things up. Don't ask questions. What are you wearing, a wire? Who is this kid? I'm like, I'm your son. Bobby Petz, who doesn't even have dogs and cats. You would think Bobby Petz would have something domesticated. He doesn't. He has like exotic, illegal pets. I don't know how he gets them into New York City or any city. And I'm the guy he always calls. Chrissy, what's up, dude? It's Petz. Bro, come over. Just got a penguin. What? You live in a basement apartment in Brooklyn, New York. He's like, yeah, I know, and I have a penguin, so it's hilarious. Come over, dude. Take a selfie with the penguin. Put it on Facegram. That's what he calls it. He can never get it right. This guy has no idea what to do with a penguin. He got through third grade, and now he's handling live exotic animals. He makes it up. He's like, yeah, you know, I feed the penguin nuts, and it's good. I'm like, okay, that's 100% wrong. Just so we're clear, they don't have nuts in the Arctic Circle, Bobby, so the penguin's probably going to die. And then what are you going to do with a dead penguin? He's like, I don't know, Pinesalls will clean it up. I'll get another penguin. So I thought, all right, guys, thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Well, I think that the worst sitcoms put too much emphasis, what Ray was saying, on the joke and the punchline.
Right.
And I think that comedy writers, so many of them, they see the world that way. So everything they set up is just a way to get their joke in. But right. The truth is that people who watch sitcoms and love them and remember episodes they love, they don't even remember the punchlines.
Right.
They remember this really funny situation.
Right.
And these characters that they really enjoy.
Right.
And that, I think, is 1,000 times more important than any particular line or any particular joke.
Right.
I think the comedians in general... They worry about the too long going without the laugh.
Right.
And I don't think the best sitcoms have this high rate of laughs all the time. They're just fun to watch.
Yeah, and I think fun to watch, and also, you know, where you can't be like so over the top funny, you can be interesting and real.
Do you study classic shows like The Odd Couple or Mary Tyler Moore Show? Or
I don't.
I Love Lucy, which kind of sounds like your situation.
Yeah, yeah, it's
look,
similar.
Look, it's
to that.
More than just Chris. He's going to have a writing staff. You know, it's yeah, not. And I don't know how much power he's going to have in the writer's room.
Listen, everybody I know who has a bitter story about how things didn't go, they wanted to all have the same story. I didn't fucking put my foot down.
Right.
They all
right.
say that.
Right.
Don't forget, they constantly.
Well,
people
no.
People we know. I'll tell you all. They're like, I knew this was a problem. I didn't fucking take control.
Assuming you have power to take control.
Well, always see, have the power.
You don't always have the power.
But I also have the power.
You don't always have the power.
Yes, you do.
No, because Chris is not the boss
Chris,
of the show.
It's like when they
do
made you
have
change
the power?
Your joke. You
I've
had
the power.
When you have three or four networks bidding for you, you have
you
all
have
the power.
You have the power.
Well, Chris himself, no, because he's with very powerful
you
people.
You stay out of this, Chris.
How I met Chris is not, I am the boss of my stand-up act. Chris is not the boss of this sitcom. He's got the,
but it's
how
his,
I met
Chris's
your,
life.
He's got
it's
the network.
He is the boss.
I don't care if it's his life. He's got the network, and he's got the two guys from How I Met Your Mother.
Yeah, those, no, and I know, you know, I, if there's something really that, like, I think a joke or a part of my act really should be in or cultivated, I would say it, but there's a lot of trust that I'm putting in them because those guys have made successful shows. I haven't. They can't tell me what to do on stand up because I'm the expert in that as compared to them. But in this situation, I'm in there.
And as far as putting your foot down, Noam, I'm glad you brought that up because I put my foot down very recently with regard to this show.
Oh.
Yeah.
And for that reason, I caused Letterman? Somebody to resign, which was not my intention.
Esty will be back then.
I don't know if you want to get into that or not. But I have...
You know what this cocksucker did?
What did he do?
I paid somebody every week to book the show for us.
Right. And you made it very clear to this individual
EDS.
That...
I know who it is.
Yeah. You made
EDS.
It very clear to this individual that I have final say, that I can veto any of his guest ideas.
Did
you not say that to him?
Yeah, because I know you're a prima donna, but
because I'm trying to put my foot down. Didn't you just say not more than 5
but
minutes
ago? Do you think, Dan? And then I don't know. I don't want to take the light off of Chris here, but do you think, Dan?
This is a very interesting topic.
That as you wield power,
yeah.
as you wield power, that right. you could do it in a judicious way, such that you're aware. I don't want to push this guy too hard. Maybe I should call him. Maybe I should present it diplomatically. I don't want him to walk out.
Dan is
rather
not
than,
aware.
Rather than creating
what did
bitterness
I create?
And acrimony.
How did I create acrimony?
The guy said, "I'm fucking out of here. I'm not dealing with Natterman one more day in my life."
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. But that was an overreaction. He submitted.
I don't think that was.
Listen, I deal with Natterman a lot. And I think that he did overreact a little and have some backbone.
Who overreacted?
EDS, the guy who was booking the, okay. the show.
What's he
EDS?
Overreacted.
Everyday Steve.
Oh, Everyday Steve, go ahead.
He overreacted. He could just be like, all right, Natterman, we'll work it out.
What do you mean figure something out? I have veto power. Veto power means I can say no.
I agree with you, Natterman.
He booked a guy who wrote scripts for Seinfeld and something.
But before
and some
he
other.
Booked him, knowing that Natterman had veto just, power, he should have said, hey,
just,
Natterman.
Yes, you're right. But just one, what he wrote for Seinfeld and what was the other show?
Cheers, I believe.
Cheers.
He wrote scripts, classic scripts for Seinfeld and Cheers. So he...
Not what I'm
stupidly
trying to...
thought this would be a great guest for the Comedy Cellar show.
Well,
Dan's
I
like,
disagree.
I don't want that guy. I want Hal Scherer. If
no,
I
no,
can...
I didn't.
I want Modi.
I didn't say I want Modi. I didn't say I want Modi.
So Calabria's like, fuck this
whoa,
shit.
Whoa, whoa, whoa.
If I have veto
power or do I not have veto power?
This is the problem. If you present it this way, I would have told you to go fuck yourself too.
But he should have just asked Natterman before.
Not that
he
it's very hard to get my wife to tell you to go fuck yourself.
Noam has veto power on who works here, right?
Yes,
no,
I do.
I don't question that. If I don't think he's making the right decision.
I'm very happy you said that because I do have veto power. And, you know, I'm very careful how I wield
that's
my veto
true.
Power with Esty and with Liz. Very, that's
true.
Very
actually, no
careful.
One gets fired from here, right?
No, that's not
I
true.
I have to fire them and it really takes
so
a while.
I have to,
I will put my foot down, but I'm because I understand. I understand that if I tell Esty, listen, I don't want to book
I already let slide several guests that I did not want on for precisely the reason that you are describing.
Oh my God.
Okay, I had let
several
guests.
I hate we to made, take Natterman's side.
I'm waiting to get adobo thrown at me.
My wife put adobo on my father's final turkey before he died. My
he loved
God.
It.
Let
he
Liz.
It. That was
Liz
the best
has
turkey he
I
ever
want
had.
You to know adobo in the turkey. No adobo
too late.
In the turkey.
It was too late.
Liz has.
It was a
point
great episode. It was a great. I got to tell you the story. Go ahead, Liz.
Liz has a point to make, and in my favor. So go ahead.
I hate to agree with Natterman, but Natterman was miserable for a few weeks with the guests, and he wasn't happy, and he wasn't happy on the show, before the show, after the show, and
so who's going to book the show? So is
we're booking it right now. We
so
have,
this is what he should have done. He should
we've
have said,
been booking it all along.
He should have said, I'm not. You know what? I'm not happy
Natterman
with the guests
made
being booked.
Clear.
No, he should say,
I was
Steve,
clear.
Steve, why don't you come into the office? Let's have coffee, and let's discuss this.
We did discuss guests. He knew exactly the kinds of guests I wanted. And what's the difference? I have veto power. If he suggests a guest and I say no, what's the fucking problem?
Okay, but
what do you want me to say?
The problem is this.
You want me to say no, but
I'll tell you the problem is I'm not lifting a fucking finger to book guests on this show.
That's
so
right.
now
that's
you
right.
own it.
You know what? We've been booking all along before, Steve.
Okay. No, you mean now you will be booking.
Now
you've been
be booking.
Booking the whole fucking time.
Because let me tell you another.
You never participated
you're
in booking anyway.
For let that me tell you. Let me tell. Check now.
Let me tell
guess
everybody.
What? Guess what? You never lifted a finger before.
Let me tell everybody.
Well, he didn't.
I got Ann Coulter.
I got Ann Coulter. Let me tell everybody a lesson in life.
Yeah.
You take it easy. But at the point where
no in a very nice way.
But at the point where you decide you are ready to press the issue to the point where somebody may walk out, you have plan B in advance. You don't fucking push Calabria to the point where he walks out until you've said you kind of like made inroads to someone else who could step into that job.
Whoa.
Otherwise, you're left with nobody. Read the fucking Godfather, Dan. Everything you need to know about life is in the Godfather.
We're not left with nobody. We're left in the exact same position we were in before
Dan,
Calabria.
Don't hate your enemies.
He's not my enemy. I have nothing against Steve, number one. Number two, all I did was say no, which was in my right to do.
Dan, it's business, not personal.
Would you shut up with this fucking Godfather? Fucking shut up with that stupid Godfather?
Dan, I'm the hunted one. I'm not that clever.
It was an abortion, Michael.
It was an abortion, Dan. It was an abortion, Chris. An abortion.
I never expected him to walk out, ever.
This whole Jew thing has got to end.
That is the problem.
I never expected him to walk out for simply doing what you had told him. Steve, you can book the show. Natterman has veto power, so I used it. I never expected a reaction that strong because I simply used the veto power that I was given.
It's how
never,
you used it.
How I used it, I said, no, I don't want this guest. I'm sorry. And then he came back and said, well, I think it'd be a good guest. And I'm saying, I just don't want to discuss it. I don't want this guest.
All right. You're boring,
all right?
Chris. You're boring,
no,
Chris.
No, you're not.
I'm not boring, Chris.
Twitter.
That's number one. Number two, as far so I never expected him to walk out. All I did was use my veto power.
Okay,
and number two, as far as a backup plan, we're no worse off than we were before.
So fine. So if you never... If you never expect him to walk out, when he said, that's it, I quit, which might have just been a cry for help.
Yeah.
Yeah. You could have called him and said, well, hold on. You don't need to quit. Let's just work this out. You could have tried to salvage the situation. Say like,
he couldn't. His veto power was in the way.
No, Steve was your idea.
He does have
mine.
A big
That's
veto
number
power.
One. If you want to bring him back, you bring him back. It wasn't my idea. I like Steve. It wasn't my idea to have him on the show. I like him fine. You want to bring him back? Bring him back. Take away my veto power. I don't care. I told Steve.
No, your veto power is booking the show now.
I said, if you want to go to Nome and take it over my head, fine. But I don't want this guest. Okay? If he wants to walk out and overreact, I'm not going to apologize for something that I didn't do. I didn't do anything
he's
wrong.
He's my friend and he's a good friend.
Then hire him back and take away my veto power.
He might have overreacted.
I may not stay, but you can take away my veto power.
Oh, ultimatum.
That was a wifey move.
And
listen, when you get in with the network executives, just remember everything Natterman is doing and do the opposite,
right?
As far as... You know, what position we're in without Steve? The same position we were in before Steve, which was we booked the show, we text Noam, guest ideas, he doesn't respond.
Yeah, that sounds...
We book who we book, oftentimes last minute. We're no worse off, that I can tell you. I mean, maybe we won't get Ann Coulter. I don't know, maybe
that's... Steve booked that awesome guy who was involved in the drug trade.
Yeah, I mean,
remember,
maybe, all right.
He booked someone else recently that turned out to be really, really good. He booked some really good guests.
Yeah, but that was...
I think the problem was that he didn't understand that he really had to go through Natterman, and it should have been a discussion and say, hey, Natterman, I have this great guest. What do you think? have that conversation.
Let me tell you how ugly this is, what you're hearing right now. See, Liz is taking your side. You know why?
No, why?
Because he does the same thing.
Because I try to make her be more diplomatic sometimes.
He does the same thing. Like when he books things without letting me know when the calendar's already full. Listen,
the bottom line is,
well, so maybe
it's just like running for president. Everybody criticizes the guy. And as soon as Obama took office, all of a sudden he started doing 70% of what George Bush was doing. It all seems so easy when you're out there. I don't want this. I don't want that. When you have to finally sit behind the desk and you have to make sure the show gets booked. And you have to make sure
the show gets booked every week. It's been getting booked. Right. No problem.
Well, what about your mafia dad?
We didn't hear about the mafia dad.
Your mafia dad stand for this shit?
I want to meet your dad.
Elizabeth
so
has
badly.
As a CIA dad.
I do.
Oh, really?
Oh, yes. My God.
Well, I thought you wanted to talk about the guy.
He's the enemy.
Doesn't stand for the national anthem.
Oh, yeah. Skinny, though.
What about
Italian.
The national anthem? You want to talk about your mafia dad or the national anthem?
I want to talk about the national anthem.
Okay.
Let's talk about the national anthem.
Okay.
What are your thoughts
on this guy, this football player, which is not new, it's old news by now, but I thought it might be an interesting discussion to have here, he's an adopted black individual. Yes. I'm not a sports, as you know, a person, but I believe that he was a player for one of the players in the National Football League, one of the teams in that league.
Yes.
49ers, right?
Yep.
Colin Kaepernick.
The 49ers of San Francisco, I believe.
Yes.
That is named, of course, after the gold miners, I believe it was, in the 1840s.
Natterman, get to the point.
Yes.
Well, that's all I really know about the 49ers. But so he didn't want to stand for the national anthem of the United States, played before every sports game, because he wanted to protest discrimination and racism in America, and of course that's caused
and police brutality.
Police brutality in particular, and racism in more general terms in the United States. And of course, he is being called by some a traitor, by others a hero. And I know that Noam Dorm, because I know one thing I know about Noam, I know a few things about Noam. Number one, that he won't return my text messages.
And
would you get rid of that, by the way, on a related note, that awful. Every time you send Noam a text, it's like that automatic text
it
back.
It bounces back.
It says, text like, I'm probably driving right now.
Yeah, and then text Liz at my number. Yes, I know.
I find it annoying, but that may be just me. But
well,
in any
just
case,
text me, Natterman. We'll discuss it.
I know that Noam has strong opinions about this, because I know if I know Noam Dorman, I know that. And I want to hear those opinions.
Well, I want to Chris, what Chris thinks first.
Well, Colin Kaepernick dates a girl that I used to do one of the MTV shows with. So I met Colin Kaepernick like 10 times. He's a great guy, very nice guy. So when you're when you know someone personally, you're like, this guy's a good guy. When you read on Instagram or like, you know, people want to kill him, it's hard to separate it. But as an act, you know, I get what he's saying. It's well within his right as an American citizen to do that. I think I know that while simultaneously you have a platform as a football player to make a change, you also are dividing your team, because now you're making the guys that block for you and the guys that are in the trenches, as they put it, with you, making them feel conflicted about how they feel about it. And I think that when you kneel on the national anthem, you're kneeling on everything. Yes, you're kneeling on police brutality and racism and all that, but you're also kneeling on people that got their limbs blown off for your safety, or for people, you know, good cops, or for, you know, people who are paying money, you know, saved up a year's salary just to come see you because NFL prices are outrageous. Like, you're sitting down on your fans, too. So I get that there's a way that's the way you wanted to make noise, but I think you can have made noise without, like, you know,
but
deafening
is there
everybody
something
else.
to the notion that is the most effective way to draw attention to your cause, because it's such a controversial way of protesting?
It is.
It is the most effective way also of getting your message heard.
Yeah, but to me it creates like a tornado where it's like, your message is absolutely heard, but now you've also created thousands of people that hate you. So are you just running in a circle now? Because now you're not going to get, now it's seeming like it's hard. Now the discussion is not even about police brutality anymore. Now it's just
about
you.
The national anthem.
Well, to answer that question, we have with us Comedy Club owner and Calabria apologist.
Oh my God!
Well, you're gonna be
Noam Dorman.
You're gonna be surprised by this, but I don't have a strong opinion about
that.
This
does surprise me.
What comes to mind when I see this situation is only two things. First of all, as a business proposition, and I don't know if what I'm going to say is true, but this is what I've been told, that the NBA has rules that the players are not allowed to sit down a national anthem. The NFL apparently doesn't.
Right.
Correct.
In which case, he can do what he wants. You know, if they've allowed this, then everybody has their causes, and while I may not agree with him, he may not agree with mine. You know, I don't know. I mean, I don't know if America were doing something that I thought was reprehensible and I wanted to sit down the national anthem to protest, he may not agree with me. So, that's up to him. I will say that what comes to mind most of all is that it's painful to me as an American to see how much support there is and how little outrage there seems to be with having huge segments of the population thinking that America really is a horrible place.
Right.
Which I think it's not. And that's, 30, 40 years ago, this would have really bothered a lot of people.
Right.
And it doesn't seem to bother people now. And I think that's a recipe for disaster for the social fabric of America. And that's the only thing I worry about.
Well, I think with stuff like that, with now because now with social media, you can hear everybody's voice. Like 30, 40 years ago, these, trolls, they didn't have a voice, and it was probably better that way. I don't think everybody should have a voice. It's like some people, they don't know what they're saying, and they're just spewing hatred just to get attention. And that's, that sucks. And that creates, I think, this idea like, so many people think our country's so bad. I don't know if they do. I don't know if they just want attention or they're going deeper and deeper down their own rabbit hole. With Colin Kaepernick, though, there is another part of it, a sports part of it, where I don't know how deeply he thought about it, but there's a lot of people that seem to feel he knew he was probably going to get cut by the team because he's just not good anymore. He took him to the Super Bowl a couple of years ago, and now he's just been replaced. So now he's put the 49ers as an organization. They can't cut him. And so now that they can't cut him, he's going to have to get his money, which is quite a lot of money. Because now if you cut him, you're racist. And now it's... You don't want any more drama. I'm sure internally the San Francisco 49ers are like, I fucking hope this guy just disappears somehow. Like, because he's just a problem. He's a problem either way. He's a problem on the field kneeling, and now he's a problem if they cut him. So he's created this kind of – he's great. Colin is great because he's like, I'm not going to get cut. I'm
going
to get money to
collect.
Sit on the bench because he's not going to start. And
is there any way we could get him to book the show?
You got to go through Steve.
And there were certain things,
so this is all a planned not just for his cause.
It's just one theory out there.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
There's one fact that happened. I don't know if this too, but it always bothers me. And I kind of fault Obama for it, which is that when this all started, this hands up, don't shoot in Ferguson with Darren Wilson and was it Michael Brown?
Yes.
So the federal government, the Federal Justice Department with Eric Holder, who was a black attorney general, decided to investigate this very closely, and they came out with a 200-page report. Also a report showing that the police department in Ferguson had a lot of racism. But in the specific, they examined the Darren Wilson thing very, very, very closely. And they decided that Darren Wilson was exonerated. They exonerated Darren Wilson. They decided that the hands up, don't shoot was not true, that the witnesses were not credible, all this stuff, and then neither Obama nor Holder really, they kind of buried the report a little bit. There was one guy, Jonathan Capehart, a black columnist who wrote a really good column saying, I was wrong about this. But in general, they made no effort to even to disseminate the knowledge that, hey, everybody was really angry about this, but as it turns out, it wasn't police brutality, and we really looked at it closely, and I'm a black president, this is my black attorney general, so you can trust us, and this wasn't the police brutality. So they never, ever try to let the pus out of the wound, even when it's totally warranted. And I always wonder, why don't they do that? Some of these cases turn out to be not true. Some of them turn out to be absolutely true.
Right.
And so that there's this whole perception out there which is a situation where there is a lot wrong with the police departments, but it's not quite as everyone sees that it is. There was also this black Harvard professor who did a study, was in the front page of the Sunday Times, and then also got buried, showing that the murders were not, that blacks were not murdered at a rate higher than whites, murdered by, I'm sorry, killed by police. Right. They were pulled over, they were all the other, arrested, all the other things, but not shot dead.
Right.
And you know, this all, it's all one ugly recipe to me. And as I said, as an American, look, I understand. If I were black, I would resent white Jesus. I would say, yeah, this is bullshit. This is the slave master's religion. I have a lot of sympathy for that point. I always wonder, like, why are they Christians? Like, as soon as you know that I was dragged over here from Africa, and I'm only a Christian because a slave master were a Christian, why the fuck would I be a Christian? You know,
right.
I understand their
why? Because maybe you want to get into the kingdom of heaven.
And I understand their ambivalence about the United States of America. If I were black, I'd have a lot of ambivalence about the United States of America. The thing is, now we have huge other populations that are coming in here who are ambivalent about the United States of America. And they're ambivalent from day one.
Right.
And they join, and why are we doing that?
Yeah.
Like, let anybody come in here, but really come in here and be anti-America from the day you step foot in here? It's a problem. It's a problem for the country.
Yeah, with the, you know.
Even if you're right.
Yeah, like being, I see, you know, the race problems too. And for me, it's like, you know, being like a new dad, like, you know, sometimes people will get on you on social media and be like, why aren't you speaking out against this cause? Why aren't you speaking out? I don't think that does anything. I think all I can do is the people who I'm in contact with, like, you know, who I meet, no matter what race or religion they are, just treat them with respect. I mean, and if they're a dickhead, then punch them in the face, you know, like, but if they're good people, they're good people. Like, I think to try to, these people that get so irate, like, I need to make a change. I need to kneel down. No, Colin, just change. Just when you're around people, just be a good person, be supportive, be loving.
It's hard for me, you know, because I got these hipsters coming in, you know, like, I was the first guy, now I got these hipsters coming in. Yoga classes, fruit shakes, racial harmony. We're going to make a difference. Dude, you're going to get shot. All right? You're riding a unicycle down Wyckoff Avenue. Someone's going to shoot you in the fucking face with a slingshot. You understand that, right? I'm an Aborigine. I've been living there since 1984. I know the lay of the land, okay? All my friends are black. That's the neighborhood I grew up in. All my friends are black, and all my black friends think I know these new white people. I don't know who these new white people are, okay? I'm just as scared as you. I don't fucking want them here. I don't need them here. One of my black friends asked me questions like I know. One time my black friend came up to me, he's like, yo, Chris, let me ask you a white question. He was like, yo, what the fuck is hummus? I was like, that was your white question? That's the one you burnt it up on? I don't know, mashed chickpeas? What the fuck? That was the one you used. All right, that's what you think we are, just walking bags of hummus.
And I would ask Colin Kaepernick this. Is there a nation out there which is so righteous that you would sing its national anthem? Meaning, like, doesn't every nation have its things to be ashamed of?
Oh, sure.
Every single nation.
According to the man that I see frequently outside of the comedy cellar, the best nation in the world is donation.
That's what he said.
All right, we have to wrap it up, Dan.
Could I just say in closing that I have nothing nor have had anything against Stephen Calabria, but I will not apologize. For something because I didn't do anything wrong.
And perhaps you two can make up one day and
I don't have anything against him. How about that?
Well, perhaps he can apologize to you for booking the show without
letting
you know before.
He did let me know and I said no.
Okay.
How do you like New Joke Night, Chris?
I like New Joke Night. Yeah. I think, you know, especially being, I've been in the club, I think, now for about 3 years, so I'm still, like, on the newer side. So there is a bit of pressure for people like me to want to try new stuff here, so it gives me the opportunity
That sitcom gets on the air, buddy. Your days of worrying about being bounced out of here are long over.
You mean I'm not going to have to MC the late show anymore?
The guest is nice now. Wait till you have the sitcom.
That's true.
Yes.
The fact that you have a deal with CBS in and of itself is very, very good.
Right. I'm still doing 130s on Tuesdays.
I don't anticipate that to go on much longer. And obviously, if the show goes on the air, you don't have to worry about those 130s anymore.
Yeah.
That was a thing of the past.
I don't mind them.
Hopefully.
I don't mind them.
And if the show lasts for a year, then, of course, all bets are off. And you can just drop by and
Did
go
you hear
on.
The fear in his voice? I don't mind them.
Not that I mind.
You should have some fear because what he's saying.
He's like, oh, shit, what did I say?
Saturday, 2 a.m.
Yeah, I'm very happy for my 130s.
Almost.
All right. So anyway, special thanks to Chris Stefano.
Congratulations.
When will the show be on the air?
We're going to aim to film the pilot in December. And then if they make a decision to green light it, it'll most likely come out in September of 2017, next year.
You're not going to be a stand-up comic, so there's no part for like a Jewish club owner?
You can own the physical therapy clinic I work at.
Oh, there you go.
All right.
I'm going to audition for the wife scene.
Yeah.
No,
you're not
kissing Chris.
We didn't say we had to kiss.
Of course you have to kiss. You have to do what your probably has problems to hump you.
It's a fake kiss. It's on TV.
Yeah, it's sitcom
the
kiss.
The part of the Jewish club owner will be going to probably
Robert Klein.
No, what's that guy's name? The Hebrew Hammer. He was in Gaffigan sitcom. Adam Goldberg.
Yes.
It will go to somebody that is known to the network people.
Charles Grodin.
It will not go to...
Well, what Latin actress do you want to play your wife? Or wifey?
My wife, I don't know, but I know her mom. I would love... Perfect world, like the Abuelita, would be Rosie Perez. That would be the perfect
that's good,
pick.
That's good. That'd Rosie Perez could be my mom.
She would be interested, yeah. Yeah.
Please, Rosie, if you're listening.
And you know, the dad, which is the most important... If you're listening, would be the legendary Colin Quinn.
Legendary, CQ. But
why wouldn't he do that?
Well, he's saying that he doesn't know. You know, he's like, I have things going on my own. I have my one man show. I'm like, all right.
Does the network want Colin Quinn?
Well, you know, I'm just talking perfect world. I'm just talking. I mean, Rosie Perez and Colin Quinn could very well both have things going on and they can't do it. Or like you said, the network may be like, we want to go another way. So
But
Noam has told you, you got to put your foot down. If the network says we don't want Colin,
CQ.
you got to say, no, it's going to be Colin or I'm pulling the entire show.
Yeah, I'm out of here.
No.
Right. You know how Coppola insisted on Al Pacino?
Yeah.
You got to insist on Colin Quinn. He's your Al Pacino.
Well, you got to insist, even if it means losing the entire sitcom.
No.
And ruining your career.
God.
There's nothing wrong with bluffing. That's
He'll
all I'm saying.
He'll always have hosting the
show. Can always back down.
On Tuesdays.
In any case, we wish you luck.
Thank
and
you.
And I say that with sincerity.
I appreciate that.
Or as much sincerity as I can muster.
Yeah.
No. He wishes wealth to very few people on this earth.
Well, for most people. I even wish well for Stephen Calabria. I hope he finds that booking job he's been dreaming about. Where he gets final say. But it won't be here.
Oh, my God.
Well, I have to.
I don't think he's trying to have final say.
I'm only doing. Yes, he was. Because either he has final say or I have final say. And
he brought it to you. He didn't like
it. I said
no. You didn't like it.
Now, he knew that I had final say. All of a sudden, I use
next
it and
week,
he doesn't like
next
it.
Next week, if you don't mind, I'd like to read all the text messages on the air back and forth between you two, and then we can judge
There them. Were only a couple. There were
I
only two.
Whatever they are.
I don't have them. If Steve has them, fine.
I'm sure he has them. All right. Good night, everybody. Thank you very much.
Good night.
Thank you.